podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen low. Great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davison Sanchez, Lucas Moura, and belted into the net. Brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First time here to Son. Kane, good area for Spurs, and Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane! That is exceptional. Lamella will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason. Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward. Oh, wow, what a run! Heung-min Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Welcome and good evening or good morning, depending on when you're listening. This is another podcast by New Spurs Order under the Touchline Fracker banner. I'll be your host again tonight, or again this morning. X-Pac, and I'm joined again by my wonderful co-host, Tops, aka Booker T. First of all, smiles. How you doing, man?
Yeah, not too bad, really, not too bad. We're twinning tonight in our vests. as we are obviously getting into the summer mood. But yeah, man, I'm good. Always good to be on with you. Strangely, 2 weeks in a row, it's two of us. But yeah, man.
Yeah, it's been a very availability. I wouldn't even say issues, but yeah, everyone's out doing other things with the sun out, or Doctor Strange 2 just came out as well. So yeah, pretty understandable. Things going on. I still need to get myself to watch that, but I've got a confession to the Marvel fans that I haven't watched WandaVision yet. So I've got to do a crash course on that, and then and only then I'll allow myself to watch Doctor Strange. But I didn't get into WandaVision at all.
But WandaVision is excellent. Excellent program.
I was hoping you'd turn around and say you hadn't seen it as well to make me feel a bit better. But...
No, mate. I binged it the minute it came on, mate. So it's all good.
Ah, man. Some of the Marvel heads in the group chat are going to cook me for that now to hear that. But yeah. I'll move swiftly on then. I'll try and find a really good catch up on YouTube if needs be. But yeah, I'll have to get use out of my Disney Plus account eventually. I've just been waiting for Kenobi, to be honest. But there you go. But yeah, there are matters at hand. Obviously, Spurs played on the weekend. Another high pressure game in this race for top four. Playing Leicester off the back of a Europa Conference League semi-final. So expected them to rotate, but didn't quite expect them to rotate as much as they actually did. Tops, what did you think of their lineup compared to ours? And the expectations just going into that game, really?
It's a bit of a funny one, man. Like, we pretty much dom Leicester anytime we play them, be it home, be it away. He's a bit of their daddy, isn't he, really, when we play them. So to be honest with you, I was always kind of hopeful that we would kind of go into the game with like a positive attitude, knowing that we've got the ability to beat them. Obviously taking into account their lineup, I think they made 8 changes, which is pretty predominantly like a second team. And then they have players like Vardy and Tielemans on the bench. So to be honest with you, it was very much their prerogative to prioritise the game against Roma on the following Thursday. And when I heard the news about that, it kind of buoyed me a little bit more that, yeah, we could get a positive result. So going into it, I was feeling kind of positive, but always naturally Spurs at home against any team. There could be anything happening. But yeah. Generally, just a positive feeling, knowing that they had that Europa League game to come. And I knew that like our recent performances against Leicester have kind of given me a fair bit of confidence.
I mean, for sure. I mean, Kane going into this game with a bit of a goal drought was a bit interesting as well. But yeah, all those changes that Leicester made, you've also got Maddison out, who I thought was going to be a huge threat. Yeah, Drewsby Hall, Tielemans, Vardy's been on a bit of a decline anyway. They changed up their wing-backs as well. So I'd say the only players who are from the first team that play, obviously, Kasper Schmeichel, Soyuncu. Sumar comes in and out of the team, but I guess he's a fringe player as it stands. Kelechi, Sinyaman, Iheanacho played, and Daka, who's been in and out of the team, came in. So, yeah, fair play. They got a few threats, but again, mostly a fringe team. And then, obviously, we go into it starting Lucas Moura. Obviously, when the news first came out that Kulusevski was dropped, almost. No, he was dropped. He was dropped. We all assumed, yeah. I think, that he must have picked up a bit of a knock for Lucas Moura to come in ahead of perhaps Steven Bergwijn, who has been playing much better than more recently. It was a scandalous decision within itself, I thought. Obviously, then it came out that the news was now Kulusevski doesn't have a knock and he wants to give Lucas Moura a run out. I didn't get it. I didn't think there was any basis for it other than just to keep Kulusevski on his toes. But again, Lucas Moura can't even stay on his own toes. So it's a bit of a strange decision when you've got someone who's been playing well on the bench. And he had some comments to say about Bergwijn after the game, which we'll get into. But yeah, it was a strange decision. So that being our lineup, it made me not feel too confident going into it, even with all Leicester's changes. Purely, like, I didn't see us being able to penetrate them if they just decide to set up with two banks of four, which Brendan Rodgers did in the fixture against us at home last season, and then just kept the two up top. It was like Mourinho and Brendan Rodgers both having a block of two fours off, basically. And I think we may have even lost that game. I can't even remember, but it was a poor game within itself. I saw us probably struggling to create anything. And the first half, it's weird. I thought the first 10 minutes was okay. So, see, we're going into it now. Me and Toss were speaking before we came into this pod, and it just so happens that I managed to catch the first half at work, then had to work for the second half, and Tops was out for brunch and caught the second half. So, to break down the first half again, 10 minutes started off really well. We looked like we were being brave with their automations. The wing-backs looked like they were getting nice and high. Then it just kind of fell off. Couldn't really get into a rhythm. Leicester kind of came on to us a bit. Were quite successful in pressing us, and obviously we weren't great at opening up any of the spaces, which they were leaving for us in abundance, to be honest. And thus then created the best chance of the half. Hugo Lloris had made what was a world-class save from Patson Daka. Initially, it looked like it hit the post, but Sumar got down on the right-hand side, pretty much bodied everyone, managed to cut it back for Daka, who was really, really unlucky. Like, the finish was top. It was going straight into the bottom corner, Hugo Lloris' fingertip to the post. And then we looked to... Like, that seemed to wake us up a bit, but whenever we managed to feed the ball into Kane, like, I remember saying last week, and I thought I was being a bit harsh, he continued this theme of trying to play a bit of hero ball. It was weird. So it would go into him. It wouldn't necessarily stick that well. And if it did stick, he'd take too many touches. Or if he wasn't taking too many touches, he'd be trying the Hollywood Bowl of Hollywood Bowls. I'm a little bit worried about Kane, but lo and behold, like in almost Bruno fashion, he managed to get the goal, scored a header from a Sun corner. So obviously that's another Sun Kane goal contribution. So we got to go in a bit, go into half time feeling a bit wholesome and nice, 1-0 up. But just to end the kind of small-ish breakdown from that half, as expected, Lucas Moura was horrible. I didn't see what he was going to add to Emerson being on that right-hand side. I thought that was going to be a disaster class waiting to happen.
I mean, what did we expect? what did we actually expect?
And
until we just accept that every time this guy plays and the possession gets to him, it's literally just a black hole for possession. You know, until we get this guy gone, I mean, I can't really see how it's going to make a difference, to be honest with you. I almost felt that with his start of the season, he showed good moments. I felt like he was always going to be a moments player for us. And I felt that under Conte, it would work in his advantage because he's high energy. He's constantly happy to run at players. And actually, in many respects, he doesn't seem like the sort of player that would kick up a fuss if he's not starting. So in the scheme of things, you would think, okay, that's the perfect kind of sub to bring on. And he even backed it up with, you know, a couple goals earlier in the season and a couple decent performances. But, I mean, again, the performance on the weekend, it's the kind of performance that you see and then you compare it to the 35-minute or 30-minute cameo that Kulusevski put in and you're like, oh, yeah, I absolutely remember why this guy should never be starting a game for this football club, you know?
Yeah, I'm done. You summed it up really well when you called it a kind of black hole of possession. I don't think that's the first time that's been said in this podcast either. And amongst other Spurs podcasts as well, I'm sure. Yeah, I've got to admit, like when Conte first came in, I was hoping and thought, you know, with Conte's coach, patterns of play and building play, it might actually help Lucas Moura make better decisions. And be in better positions and just generally just release the ball a bit quicker because like Conte he likes players to keep it, you know, 1-2 touch, maybe 3 touches max, let alone try and take on 3 players. Not even like he was able to try that against Leicester, to be fair, because, I mean, he unfortunately lost the ball before he got a chance to do that most of the time. But you know, he's had quite a few chances under Conte. Like, you can give the same caveats you give to other players, like Bergwijn, like, okay, under Nuno, under Mourinho, you know, they don't really have a progressive style, which is coached to help players make better decisions and create chances in build play, and that's fine. Like, I'd give Lucas Moura, I guess, the same kind of caveats as I've given other players, like Winksy, like, you know, other players as well. even Kane, players like Hoybier as well. I've got to give the same excuses for them, keep the same energy, but it's just not worked. And I don't know how many times Conte has to see that live in front of his very eyes. I don't know if Conte Cam itself will have to point that out to him, but it just ain't working, Chief. It baffles me. Like, even when he's been making substitute appearances as well, or when it comes to Conte making the sub, and I think, again, this has been addressed on other podcasts as well, but I don't know how he's getting minutes over someone like Bergwijn, who, again, has a style of play which suits yours, plays up top in the position you want Lucas to play in.
Yep.
And has actually put in good performances, especially against Leicester in the reverse fixture this season. Like, scored twice in the 90th minute,
you know,
to win us the game, and almost made me crash into a taxi while I was trying to listen to the game in the car. Like,
if there's that, anyone who deserves who at least deserved to play, it would have been Birch. But for some reason, he decided to change it up and drop Kulusevski and go with Mora, which I think after that first half performance, well, that first sort of 60 minutes, he was like, enough is enough.
Enough is enough. You're not getting a compilation out of this. Others will, you're not. That's fine. But going into the second half, just 55 minutes on the clock and shock, horror. Oh, to my absolute, I was completely aghast. But I mean, Lucas Moura got hurt for Kulusevski. So I mean, take it away, like what kind of impact he had, and generally how the second half went for us as we
it was a funny control. One. Well. Obviously, as you said, I didn't want to ruin my bottomless brunch, so I didn't watch the first half, and by that point, 45 minutes in, I was knocking back the cocktails. So to be honest, when I saw that we were winning 1-0 through, like, you know, Sky Sports updates, I was like, you know what, I'll just put the second half on as I get more merry through the afternoon. And to be honest with you, I had seen what had been said in, like, you know, the WhatsApp groups, and I kind of had a flick through what people were saying on Twitter, and it just seemed like we were a bit flat in that first half, despite, you know, getting the first goal through Kane. We had, like, you know, given up a couple big chances to Leicester. Lloris obviously made that really big save. So I was just hoping that, you know, based off how we have performed in second halves on the Conte, especially at home, that maybe, you know, having had a word with them and restructure, that we would go out and give a better account of ourselves. And it seemed like we did. It seemed like we did. It seemed to me like we were making a lot of fluid movements, moving the ball like quite quickly. One thing that I really did like was how much dynamism we had when Kulusevski come on.
Yep.
Well, he really did almost change the game in many respects. I felt like, although it was kind of a cagey affair, we were turning the ball over from them quite a lot. And it seemed like with every turnover that we had, we were almost making or creating a chance, you know, at will. Kulusevski did some excellent work on that right side, which is apparently a huge comparison to what was being done on the right side when Lucas was there. And, you know, amazingly, he was able to provide two assists, the first coming with really nice play on the right wing, to then, you know, almost dancing his way to the edge of the box, feeding a pass into Son's path, and Son turning and hitting it in the opposite corner. And then, you know, just like a small five-yard pass assist for Son's excellent second goal. So, I mean, it seemed like it was a good second half. We definitely seemed lively. Romero, absolutely imperious. Honestly, like, to make the challenge that he did for the third goal.
Unreal. Unreal. I don't understand how he does it.
Absolutely unreal. I don't know. Sometimes when I think of him, it's like when I watch him, there's so many good things about his game and so many, like, scary things about his game that it's just that it all kind of, like, muddles into one. And I'm like, okay, this is a player that I can actually trust. This is a player that I can actually see us, you know, going places with. And he, you know, lots of the pressures that him and Dyer provided in the second half, especially through the middle of the park, were like great starting points for us to be able to build attacks, get the ball out onto the flanks, get the ball to Kulusevski, getting the ball to Kane. So in the end, what looks like a comfortable result, 3-1, Leicester scoring right at the end, maybe wasn't so comfortable. But again, one thing that we've seen that second half, especially at home, we do tend to be quite clinical. So in the end, yeah, it was a good result for us. Before, obviously, our upcoming game now against Liverpool.
Man, yeah, I'm still trying to fathom how Romero does do that. I've just double checked in the game; he didn't even pick up a yellow card in that game.
Oh, he didn't, man.
Right. Considering his obviously he's what you could call a proactive style, but yeah, the way he lunged into that second challenge. Honestly, I think 99% of other players in the Premier League probably end up getting the red card for like mistiming.
Yeah, and I think as well, like Rodgers even said something in his post press or something about a challenge. I think it was Soyuncu, I think, who was on the other end of that challenge. I think he said something in the lines like, if you're going to go for a challenge, you literally have to go for it. You basically can't just pull out. And in the end, him pulling out led to the ball, you know, falling to Deki, and him obviously feeding Son for that third goal, you know?
Hold that, Brendan. No, I remember you laying into Brendan. I think it was the last season. Brendan, absolutely Brendan laid into him when we...
talking too heavy, man, after that, you know, before that first game.
When we stopped at the top four. Conte.
Yeah, he needed to hold that, man. He needed to hold this one. A nice little free piece, man. He needed to hold this.
It is insane as well. Like, just again, Romero. It's a stable. He's going to be so crucial going into this top four race. Not even just his challenges on the ball, but obviously how he steps into midfield from centre back. And he's actually really good at progressing play on the ball as well. So with him not being booked, I don't think he can rack up enough yellow cards to get a suspension before the end of the season is up. So, that's obviously great news. We touched upon with Kulusevski's fluidity as well. Obviously, I've seen the goals back now, and I love what he did for our second goal, where he literally shifted it onto his left foot, got into space. And what Lucas Moura never does is just get his head up. He kind of just like, okay, let me just internally scream and see. Yeah, let me see if I can scream it that way. Let me see if I can hoof it this way. He's literally there, like arms out, like, okay, where are my options? Where are my options? And then he waited, then played it into Son, who I expected to take a touch on his left foot and shift it onto his right and finish. But he did this weird thing where he rolled the defender onto his left foot and still finished it, which was perfect, to be fair. Like, we got a sharp Sonny back, and obviously the third goal was a worldie as well. So we're seeing some of the human Son world-class shouts come back, aren't we?
Owen. Have a bit of shame, man. Have a bit of shame, bro. Come on, man.
The official Spurs account, by the way. I'm just regurgitating what they said.
Not hearing it. Because okay. I said last season, right, if this man scores 20 goals in the league, I think he can really start to be in that conversation. And he didn't. And I was like, you know what? Fair enough. And again, he's kind of, you know, been chopping away, had a really early goal flurry, and then was kind of, you know, patchy like he always is. And then the last few games, he really has come to the fore. I mean, to be honest with you, this is what, you know, this is what top players should be doing. You know, I've really put a rally call out for Son and Kane that, you know, these last seven finals that they speak of, these are the games that we need the top players, the big players, like Lloris as well, to step up in moments when we need them. And, you know, arguably on Sunday, he did. Both goals, very well taken. The second goal, absolutely incredible finish. I mean, honestly, that's probably in, you know, the top sort of 5-10 goals of the season in terms of where he hit it from, how far wide it actually went before it came back in. And even from, like, behind the goal, you look at it and you think Schmeichel had no chance. Absolutely no chance. So yeah, he's in a good moment, you know. He's in a good moment. I think in the league he's only second to Salah.
I was about to say he has more non-penalty goals than Salah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what is it? He's got 19 goals in the league, 6 assists, 26 goal contributions, 19 non-penalty goals. I mean, he's doing what we want him to do. And at the end of the day, while sometimes his performances aren't like, they're not amazing, he's an attacker, an inside forward or forward, however you call it these days, and he's putting up the numbers that's expected of him. So, you know, fair play to him. I was one of the guys, you know me, I was one of the guys that called him out. I called out some of his performances. I called out, you know, what's his role in the team, and fair play, he shut me up a fair bit with these goal contributions, and I'm happy with that. Like, even as well, I look at someone like Kane. I think Kane's got 14 goals. In 14 goals this season. I mean, I think he's done okay. He's done okay in terms of how his season started. But again, we need these guys to be performing consistently, adequately in the games that matter. You know, not just against the bums where you can score three or four as a team, and you get a brace or a couple assists. But we need them to perform in the games where maybe we can't trust anything that maybe Lucas could do or Bergwijn can do or even some of our midfielders. And Sunday they did that. They did that.
Are you worried about Kane? Because I don't think he's had a great game since he's had that talk about the seven finals or eight finals, hey, listen, whatever it was.
Am I worried? No.
He's got to come against Virgil van Delegate next game.
So. I'm not worried. Like, fine, he was the first. It was the first goal in five. I think he had a five game Baron run, where this was the first goal he scored in that five. So, I mean, I'm not worried. But like, when I think of Kane as well, I'm taking into account like lots of different things. I'm taking into account that this is one of the first times I'm in a while actually at Tottenham that he's played a season arguably with no injuries, and arguably he could be, you know, kind of tiring or pulling away in terms of his physical condition, you know, having played pretty much every single game as a starting striker for Spurs this season. Maybe that could be something that's playing into it. But I also kind of think, I don't know, because his role has kind of changed in the team as well. Like you said, he's almost taking on this hero role, or he's taking it on himself to try and create stuff for the team so that, you know, people will always kind of pull him. And by pulling him, they're almost like he's pulling away and creating spaces for other people like Son and, you know, Kulusevski. But I don't know. I also think things will change when we have better players in some of these positions. I feel like when the onus isn't on him to help progress, to help create, and his game is predominantly to be in the final third and finish a lot of the chances that's created, which I think in the scheme of things with better fullbacks, you know, with better central midfielders, with another quality, you know, sort of creative midfielder or like another inside forward, I feel like, you know, it will come back. But after what was a horrible start to the season, he basically, you know, didn't score for 13 games at the start. 14 goals in, you know, from the rest of the season as a turnaround is not bad. I wouldn't say I'm worried, but again, like, you know, these big games coming up, I think Liverpool and Arsenal, I really want to see him put up something. I need to see it. No, it's not I really want to. I need to see him put up something, because none of this will matter if he doesn't score against Liverpool or doesn't perform against Arsenal, and then he scores a hat-trick against Norwich or Burnley in the last games when, you know, the top four sort of race could be done by then, you know? I need him to perform now.
That's what I mean. And obviously he had a strong... well, he dug his heels in strongly in the summer, didn't he, about potentially wanting to leave because we weren't matching his ambitions. And now we've got a manager in Conte that's really driving those ambitions back up. And we've got ourselves in a really good position. A few weeks ago, before the Brighton and Brentford games, to really like say, you know, this is how much we want top four, to then kind of propel ourselves back up to challenging for titles. And, you know, ever since that admission about us having to need to perform for seven or eight more finals. I can't remember what exact number
seven,
he said.
Seven.
It was seven. Yeah. Again, like if he doesn't perform in the next two games, like I'm not saying he has to score or assist, but at least, you know, be able to retain the ball and not just constantly play Hollywood balls. At least help the team and play relatively well. Yeah, if he's not doing that in the next two games and we don't finish top four, you got to look at him and be like, look, you have to hold that a bit, because, you know, we could have probably got top four if you had performed. So you kind of turning around, if you kind of have another moment in the summer where okay, you say you want to leave again because the club isn't doing so well. It's just like, well, you're actually one of the main parts of that this time.
Exactly.
And we can't be accused of being the Harry Kane team of old, because we're still performing some... obviously, bailed us out. We've got Kulusevski balling now. Mm-hmm. The team in itself has managed to score a few goals, albeit with the help of a few very good assists from Kane. But again, he's just gotten too much of a habit now of just being a bit like Bruno. So hopefully he can snap out of it for Liverpool, because we've seen him against Manchester City effectively run the game. Into getting us a result up north. So anything close to that performance, and you know, we could actually be in with a shout.
It's a big game for him. It's a big game. I mean, like, I'm all for, you know, these big knockout sort of, these big sort of, you know, games on Sky Sports where everyone has the eyes on you, and you know, I don't know, I hate to say it, but I just don't feel that in like some of these big, big ones, he's turned up enough. I feel like this is the kind of game that even against a strong Liverpool team, you have to take it on yourself to drag us through this somehow. In the Arsenal game, in the Liverpool game, he has to, because these are the games that you'll be playing. If you're in a better team, or you move to another club and they have a bigger profile than us, and you know, you want to be playing in these big, important games, these are the kind of games that you need to actually show that you can perform when required. You know, people are always going to ask the questions about the other big players and other big clubs, if they can perform in big games. How often is people like, I don't know, how often was Eden Hazard or KDB or Steven Gerrard or Lampard asked about in these big games? Sometimes you just need to get it done. And if it means taking it in your hands and pulling the team with you, that's what's required. Because like you've said, this man cannot come in the summer and he cannot start speaking about stupid contract extensions, unhappiness in his camp, when this man effectively threw the first 13 games of the season, finally came back into some kind of form, and then had the audacity to then speak again in the media about seven finals, and up to now has only performed in one. And when I say performed, he's only scored.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it a good performance. You know, from what I saw in the first half anyway. I don't know if it picked up that much in the second. But
no one's saying his legacy is at risk, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying these next two games, there's going to be a lot of people looking at Kane. Lot of people looking at Kane, and I really do hope that he can step up and perform, because there's going to be a lot of questions asked about Kane at the end of the season if this doesn't work out.
Yeah, if anything, I'm not even sure if he's been called out enough. I haven't really seen, you know, Spurs Twitter be that concerned with him. I don't think I thought I was being harsh in last week's pod, but again, it's another kind of, I guess, par performance for Kane. And when I look at how the rest of the squad are performing in comparison to what their level is, like, you've got Hugo Lloris, who's standing up to be counted, Ben Davis performing above his level, mm-hmm. Eric Dier performing probably above way above his level, level. Mm-hmm. Romero performing above his level or at his level, so performing well. Emerson, I don't even know what his level is, to be honest.
But no comment.
Doesn't look good. No comment. But he's got a new compilation out, so check that out.
hey man,
even Højbjerg is playing well now. That's calm. I've gone under the radar a bit. Bentancur playing well. Sessegnon not performing to his level, you could say.
Ben Sessegnon, yeah,
being a bit timid. Kulusevski playing above his level, really coming to his own. Heung-min Son. Trying to reach that kind of world-class, like, consistency, as well as ability. Again, bailing us out. So there's only really one or two players that are performing below their station at the minute. And Kane, for me, is one of them. So
agreed.
it's going to be interesting, especially going into these next two games.
I mean, say we don't get top four, right? What do you think he has to say? What do you think he can? What do you think he can do? If the club come to him and say, we want to offer you X, Y, Z, or we want you to stay, blah, blah, what can he say? Do you think he'll be like, oh, I've been here for X, Y, Z, I should be allowed to leave, blah, blah, blah. Because I just don't understand how he can turn around after this season, the way he's performed in parts of it, especially in some of these bigger games, and he can say, okay, I did my best. He didn't. No, it's not that he didn't. He hasn't.
I think he... Right,
let's be honest.
We don't get top four and he kind of says this in the summer, I think he needs to probably hire Yao as part of his PR team.
I just don't see it. Like, I literally just don't understand. He has to perform in these next two games. I'm telling you. Like, it's on the line for him. He absolutely has to perform. And if he doesn't, I promise you, all the happy clappy Spurs fans will call him out. I'm absolutely certain of it. Look at Son. Son hasn't even played particularly well. He has 26 goal contributions, 19 goals, non-penalty goals.
Okay, yeah.
He needs to stand up and be counted. He absolutely has to be. And if he doesn't, we have to call him out. Every single one of us has to.
And that's what the new Spurs order is about, really. Yeah, I don't think Conte really got asked about it in his presser afterwards. But yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what plays out afterwards. Obviously, to add to that, he did have some comments on Bergwijn as well, just to touch on it quickly.
Yeah.
Because it was interesting to me when I saw Ellie Gold say it was a bit unprompted because he was asked a question about Son and then went on to say, look, you know, perhaps I've been a bit too harsh on Bergwijn and not giving him enough minutes, not giving him enough opportunities. And he almost like apologized for that. So, yeah, that was interesting. It's almost like he's admitting that he should probably be in the pecking order, at least ahead of Lucas Moura, but for one reason or another. Yeah, I don't know. But just moving on, other news that came out, I guess recently we've obviously announced that two star boys who haven't really been getting first team opportunities, not really the environment to get first team opportunities in this team, to be honest, in Alfie Devine and Dane Scarlett, looking to get loan moves next year, ideally in the Championship. Yeah, more power to them. As long as they can find a club which play in a similar way to us and can get first team football, then I'm all for it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, you know, both 17, they're both in a really kind of goodish moment in terms of how they're progressing. Maybe more so a higher or more exponential trajectory for Alfie Devine. You know, he's played 20 or 22 odd games across the academy teams, you know, 11 goals, I think, 3 assists. And, you know, I watched a bit of the game on Monday against Brighton on 23s. And again, like, I'm always quite impressed with, like, just how he carries himself. Seems to be super vocal. Doesn't ever seem to be afraid of the ball. Always wants to get on it, even if it's just a touch. Not afraid to make, you know, sort of risque passes as well. So I think for him, it would be a good thing. I also just think as well that, like, it has to be the right type of loan. I kind of feel bad in many respects for Dane Scarlett. Just because whilst I think it's a good thing, like Conte said, it's important for someone like him to be able to play alongside and train alongside people like Kane and Bergwijn and Lucas. But it's also difficult because, you know, he hasn't had many minutes and arguably that could be looking at as it almost being stalling his trajectory or, you know, his progress. But he always says that, you know, Conte's always said that he seems to be a very good, you know, very level-headed, very bright prospect for the future. I mean, obviously, as well, when we're looking at, like, you know, where he's at, he's 17. Apparently, he's bulking up and getting a bit stronger and kind of in preparation for maybe a loan move to a, you know, what is effectively a men's league. I mean, the Championship, I think, maybe could be a step too far for him. Just because you kind of want to guarantee him minutes, and you know that he's going to be playing against, you know, well, sort of regular season sort of men, way older than him. So maybe, you know, like we've seen with Troy Parrott, it's okay to kind of get the experience and the minutes maybe in a lower league, just to build your confidence, get some goals back in you as well. But Alfie Devine, I'd really like to see where he, you know, where he goes. Like, and like you said as well, it's so important to try and get the right kind of loan. We can see this season, we've managed to get back Jamie Donnelly, who's like a really good prospect. But like, you can have a look at what it looks like if it's detrimental with someone like Niall John, who went away to Charlton and had pretty much a horrendous sort of loan, a loan sort of spell where he didn't even play any first team minutes. And he actually came back as well. And he and Jamie Donnelly both played as well on Monday against Brighton. I only watched the first half, but again, these are kind of good players that you just want to make sure you don't want to like stall their progress, and you kind of want to give them time in and around the first team, but you also want to make sure that they're kind of getting some minutes. So I kind of also feel for someone like Harvey White at the moment. You know, he's someone who, when you watch him for the under-23s, is kind of a grey area. He almost looks too good to play at the under-23 level, but then he's not just there, you know, in terms of first team football, in the men's team. And he, again, hasn't had any minutes since he's been included in a number of first team squads over the last couple of weeks. But again, I suppose that's why you have the loan sort of system, where you can try and find the right places for these guys. But it's good as well. Like, I mean, let's be honest, 17-year-olds looking to play men's football, way beyond their years, you know. Devine, who only, I think he turns 18 in the summer, has been playing under 23 football pretty much most of the season. So I can't imagine, you know, a little bit of a step up into the Championship or maybe League One would be like terrible. But I think it's good that the club have been like proactive in trying to get these guys sorted with loans, where they can get them to get some minutes, get some experience, you know, just get themselves going, so that hopefully, like, you know, with Skip, I mean, I think with Skip we were really lucky, but like with Skip, you come back a bit mature, a bit battle-hardened, having played and having, you know, experienced playing sort of men's football, really, because essentially academy football is a bit of a level drop in terms of where we're at right now. But I think it'll be a good thing. I think it'll be a good thing for them, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. You can only agree, especially when they're playing under 23 football and they look like they're, as it stands, above, like, playing above that level at the minute. So playing men's football now only makes sense. But now we are, I guess, getting into the nitty gritty. So now we've got Liverpool on the weekend, which a few weeks ago we were kind of looking at this as almost like a free hit, like, okay, cool, we'll probably get results against Brentford or Brighton, and we can go into this probably expecting to lose and still lose, and, you know, it's not going to dent our chances now. Whereas if we lose, then now it's looking like our season could well even be over. So boy, even though Liverpool have had their games in midweek, obviously a very tough tie against Villarreal. Like, are you confident at all in getting a result, considering how much, I don't even like using luck as a thing, but just how many kind of unlucky things we've had happen against us, especially at Anfield recently? Like, you've got Sissoko, you've got Son rounding Alisson and hitting the bar at 1-0. While we were 1-0 up, sorry, we had Bergwijn go 1v1. We've conceded 90th minute winners to them with like Toby Alderweireld on goal with that Firmino header. That's a very painful compilation that I put myself through on Twitter yesterday that just showed all the unlucky moments. Lo Celso missing from like point blank range.
Yeah.
All the chances we missed in the reverse fixture at home, like it's just been tallying up and tallying up. Like, surely we are overdue a bit of luck, no?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. I just hate this fixture, man. I hate this fixture just because, like, in many respects, you know, you're basically coming up against one of the best, if not the current best team in Europe. They are playing at, and you know, I don't really want to blow smoke up their asses, but they're playing at such a high and consistent level at the moment that you almost are looking at them and saying, where are the weaknesses? Where can we get at them? Where can we try and get something out of this match? But I don't know, I almost feel like the gods are just, you know, they've pushed it against us. Even the match on the weekend against Liverpool, normally what would have been a Saturday 5:30, they've now pushed it to 7 p.m. So it looks like we'll be playing Liverpool under the lights of Anfield, you know, on a Saturday night. I'm just thinking that we can only play in a way that would be similar to the way we did against City. And when I say this, I only really mean that we can expect to not have much of the ball. Liverpool are going to really give it to us from the beginning. Trent and Robertson are going to push. Going to push our wing backs extremely, extremely deep into our pitch. And, you know, we're going to obviously have 3 against 2, which I assume if we continue playing at the moment, you know, Henderson, Thiago, Fabinho, probably in there against Højbjerg and Benton. But, I mean, the only way that I see us getting anything out of the game is if we're happy to soak up the pressure, you know, reduce little or no mistakes, and hit them on the counter. And when we hit them on the counter, have to be extremely, extremely clinical. That's the only way to kind of see this game sort of working out for us. Like, when I watched them midweek against Villarreal, the first half, they were awful. I mean, that's actually the only way to describe it. They were awful. They allowed Villarreal to completely almost counter-press them. Every single thing that they did, they hurried them. They made them make mistakes. And then when they had the chances, they were extremely clinical. And even at 2-0 at halftime, I thought, Liverpool can still do something. But again, I wasn't prepared for, you know, the second half onslaught that they gave them. So I think, you know, like we've said, this is a big one for Kane. This is a big one for Kane. Big one for Son, because he's our most clinical player at the moment. And I'm interested to see how Kulusevski gets on. I think, like, you know, without like gassing it too much, I think Kulusevski's been a real quality addition for us.
I think he'll thrive.
You know, I think he's been a real quality addition for us if we're looking in terms of like his output. 3 goals since he arrived, or since he first started in February, mid-February. I think he's got the most assists, which is like 8 or 9 assists. He's really kind of come into his own. And, you know, arguably, if he had maybe even started the beginning of the season, you could even be putting him in there for maybe young player of the year in terms of, you know, some of the shouts. But he's like kind of been a player that we've really, you know, in some of these games we've kind of looked to. And I imagine it's kind of good to have sort of 3 players who are going to give Liverpool problems. You know, if we can kind of be clinical, you know, beat that press from those energetic 3 in the middle. And obviously, in our sort of final third, make sure that we reduce the amount of mistakes. We reduce the amount of space we give to Salah, to probably Diaz, to Mane as well. Because these are, you know, this is a game that, when I think about of all the matches we've played against them, it's always a game where there's just 1 or 2 chances that we kind of, if we don't take.
We always get our moments, don't we? We always get our moments.
It just leaves us. And it's never, like, I've always watched our games and thought, it's almost game of two halves in sometimes. There's games where, especially under Poch, they would have a really good first half and maybe we would have a really good second half. It was always quite tight. But I don't know. They're a great team, you know. They're a really good team at the moment. And obviously, you know, they've got something to play for as well. So it will be a tough one. I was looking as well. Van Dijk has never lost at home. I think it's something like 74 or 75 games, which I'm not going to lie here. Doesn't really sit.
So we'll take a draw. We'll take a draw?
Yeah, we'll take a draw at this point.
Okay.
It's an unreal record, like 70-something games, having not lost in the league at home. Like, he's never lost at Liverpool in the league at home.
That's how you delegate a defence, right?
That's fucking insane, man, honestly. But I'm just going to just not think about the game too much. To be honest with you, even in my prediction from like 7 games ago, well, when we had 7 games left, you know, I admittedly did say it was probably a bit of a free hit. I didn't really see us getting the result. But, you know, having seen the performance against Villarreal in that first half, and thinking how we could kind of set up, there's no reason why we can't try and nick anything off them, you know?
Yeah. Obviously, they changed it up for a few. They changed up a few players for the game against Newcastle as well, and they were very, I'll say they were very controlled. I didn't feel like they were under any threat, but they didn't look convincing with their win to me. But they are just an inevitable team. Obviously, whenever we play them, we get our moments. But at the end of the day, they just are a much better team.
Agreed.
But yeah, that said, it's annoying that they still have something to play for. But I think their play style suits ours. I think Klopp, hopefully I'm not paraphrasing in here, but I think he called us the best counter-attacking team in the world. I don't think that we are, but we are a very good counter-attacking threat. So setting up to play against them how we usually do, where we kind of have a mid-block and a kind of controlled long balls. So Klopp called us a long ball team in the last fixture, didn't he? But we were just like hitting some good 15, 20-yard passes lofted into Kane or whomever else. I see my boy had a blinder. I don't think he's going to start this game, though. But exploiting their extremely high line. Sorry?
Who's your boy, Owen? Sorry?
They're still Wingsy, but there's no reason why we can't exploit that again with controlled balls in behind, and I think we will get our moments again. I think we'll at least get a moment, right? Mm-hmm. But like you alluded to earlier, we've got to be completely flawless. And hopefully seize whatever moments we may or may not get, because even if we make no mistakes and play well, we can still get thrashed. Because they are just that good. And
this is why, you know, like you said, they're an inevitable side. They don't have to play particularly well, but they're going to create chances. They're probably going to score. And it's about what you do with your chances and your moments in the game, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah. Hopefully it won't be like Emerson going through on goal in the 90th minute with Son and Kane either side of him and Van Dijk's just shuttling him to goal and he misses. Imagine if he ends up going through on goal and scoring.
Man,
dunking on Trent, man. That would be insanely shameless to put in the comp. But, boy, I'd be salivating.
Everything's pointing towards a Liverpool win, man. It's just...
Everything's pointing to a Liverpool win and Luis Diaz goal contributions, given the nature of how he joined Liverpool in January. It's pretty inevitable.
They haven't dropped points, points at home since October. 12 wins in a row. They've had 10 clean sheets.
Anything else?
There's so much. It's just like, oh, we have to just turn up. You know, we know what we need to do. We absolutely know what we need to do. And, you know, if we can get any kind of result out of this game, I'll snap your handle for it.
Before I get your full prediction, if you still only had the choice of one player between Diaz, between Kulusevski, who are you taking? Because for me, it's still Kulusevski. For me,
is knowing what I know now.
As yeah. In. Yeah.
I'm taking Diaz because I just feel like he's what, like...
You snake.
he's just a speed demon. Like, he's just going to cause problems every single time he attacks anybody. And he's so confident with it. But I'm not saying that, like, you know, I really do rate Kulusevski. And to be honest with you, he's been, like, a refreshing surprise. And actually, a welcome addition. We were talking about him and Lucas. Everything Lucas does badly, Kulusevski does well. Like, literally everything.
Literally everything. And yeah, for me, Kulusevski's just added that dimension to our build-up play that we've been missing since a good Eriksen was playing for us. Just to link that midfield to attack and make good decisions.
Absolutely.
In terms of creating chances. Yeah, Kulusevski, for me, still.
Okay.
It's a shame, and hopefully he turns up.
Big one.
I think he'll thrive. He tends to thrive in the bigger games. I think he's used to that kind of pressure coming from Juventus. So, yeah, hopefully it carries over, not just to him, but to the rest of the team as well.
And you know what, as well, like, thinking about it, whilst we have pressure on our own to win, the pressure is on them. They're the ones catching or chasing City. They're the ones who know that they have to absolutely win. Keep themselves in with it. And we're almost going into it in a similar moment to when we were against City. City were the informed team. We were in a bad spot.
We had just lost three in a row, yeah.
We had just lost three in a row, you know? And we went into that game with no pressure and played kind of our game, and it worked. I'm not saying Liverpool and City are the same team, but again, you know, these are kind of similar sort of circumstances, conditions. And I just feel like, if there's one time to try and break this hoodoo, let's just do it now.
Yeah, let's just do it. Well, let's pray. Final prediction then. What do you think the score and result's going to be?
Liverpool give chances away, though, you see. That's the one thing about them. They give chances away. Trent isn't always where he's supposed to be. Van de Ligt is happy to kind of sit off and let Matip or Konate play and do the active sort of pressing defending. I'm going to go 2-2 draw.
I was thinking that as well. Yeah, I'm going to go 2-2 draw as well.
I'm going to go 2-2 draw.
And hopefully Romero clamps Diaz respectfully.
Respectfully. Yeah. Big one,
just shine him out of the game, because he's probably the only player in the league at the moment that can. More power to us. Hopefully it's going to be a case of damage limitation and we can just get a result at Anfield. I'm not expecting a win by anyway.
Agreed.
I love we made a lot of comparisons to the City game, but we just love getting that juju against City. So... we've got juju against us when we play Liverpool, so yeah, it's gonna be a hard watch. I was gonna say an interesting watch, but it's gonna be a hard watch. I'm very much gonna be watching through in between my fingers. Just
no, you're right. You know, it's gonna be a difficult
as
one.
I pray.
It's not gonna be the easiest game. Saturday night, I'm gonna be at home watching it. You know, alone, just trying to not stress too much about it. But listen. The chips will land where they land. And Liverpool away, no one's expecting us to win. So at least if they can go into that with relative sort of mental freedom and just play their game and prepare as well as they can, maybe they can get a result. You know, I would be amazed if we did. Amazed and happy, but amazed more.
For sure. But that about wraps up for our latest episode. So whoever tuned into the stream, thank you for watching. Whoever's listening, again, we thank you. We appreciate you. Obviously, come on to the Twitter account where we're always active at New Spurs Order, Instagram at New Spurs Order. Just a shout out, a quick congratulations to Coach Dave on his team winning the cup recently. Shout outs to you and your visit to St. George's Park. It's sick. On behalf of the New Spurs Order, come on, New Spurs, and come on, Leeds.
On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.